Lutheran Public Radio is now a nonprofit organization. That means all past, present, and future gifts to LPR are tax deductible. Please consider making a gift to Issues Etc. today. You can donate by check, make your check payable to Lutheran Public Radio, and mail it to LPR, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also make a tax-deductible gift online, issuesetc.org. Thanks for your support. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Dr. David Adams is our guest for the next few minutes of the program. You might have seen it in the news, ancient Syriac Bible found in Cyprus. And, of course, the word ancient is bounded by some quotation marks. The ancient nature of this is in question, although it is intriguing. Dr. David Adams is a regular guest, associate professor of Old Testament at Concordia Seminary in St. Louis. He's author of the forthcoming Concordia Commentary on Genesis. Dr. Adams, welcome back.
Great to be with you this afternoon, Todd.
Some listening to us might be surprised that we can't go back and find extant copies of the New Testament, Old Testament, New Testament together, going all the way back to the time of Christ or the apostles. They might be surprised that such things are not found. Why?
Well, there are a couple of things that work together to prevent sort of whole Bibles, as we think of them today, from being very common in the ancient world. In fact, there are less than a dozen found before 1000 A.D. altogether. But the reason is severalfold. These things were, of course, copied by hand, and the handwriting is usually a little larger, and therefore the volume created, if you get the Old and New Testament together, you get a very large book, and that's difficult to manage and use, and even more so, you know, when modern conveniences like libraries and so forth made it harder to manage, you know, books and carry them around. People didn't have cars. They had to carry them by hand. And the second factor, kind of related to that, is the expense of creating them. To copy an entire Bible and to do so kind of at one time so that all has the same look and decoration and so forth is an immensely expensive task in ancient times. And so for that reason, too, they just hardly ever occur in ancient times. The oldest that we have that we can be certain of don't occur until about the 4th century, sometime in the 4th century. They're in Greek. Again, as I said, there are less than a dozen to be found before 1000 A.D.
Okay. This one that's been found in Cyprus, at first glance, we're all looking at kind of the news reports of it. How would you evaluate it just at first glance in terms of its authenticity and whatnot?
Well, the first thing that I noticed when I looked at the article was the picture that accompanied it of a very attractively bound leather book. And that's, I think, the operative word here, book. The invention of the book, as we know it, you know, something that's bound with a spine that has individual pages, came into practice in the Christian church. So far as we know, it was not used earlier by non-Christians. The book format seems to have been something that, if it wasn't invented by a Christian, at least became popular within Christian circles and spread from there to broader secular society. So the fact that it's in a book format was the first thing that I noticed. The book format, again, we don't have any examples of this before about the 4th century. One might argue late 3rd century, but 4th century more likely. So the fact that it's a book in form suggests that it, you know, can't be, it's probably not, extremely old, that is to say, in the first 2 centuries. The other thing that strikes one about it is, again, just from the photograph, is the decoration. It wasn't all that common to decorate manuscripts at such an early period. This practice of decorating manuscripts developed in the early Middle Ages, and then more as the Middle Ages went on, largely because monastic communities had scribes who had the time to put the care into it to do the kind of decoration that we see and think of as sort of medieval illuminated manuscripts. So two things, the book format and the decoration that occurs, that shows at least in some of the pictures I've seen, makes me think that just immediately that it's not an extremely ancient manuscript. It may, of course, it's still quite old by any standards.
What should we know about the language that it's allegedly written in, Syriac?
Well, Syriac is basically a form of Aramaic. Now, Aramaic was a language, it's related to Hebrew, sort of a cousin to Hebrew, and it came into widespread use about between 800 and 700 B.C., and was, I should say, it eventually became the lingua franca, the everyday language of business and government in the Assyrian Empire, and from there it gradually became the everyday language of business and government for most of the Middle East, until the Greek invasions in the 4th century. So for about 400 or 500 years there, Aramaic was pretty much the dominant language in the Middle East in general. As I said, it's a cousin of Hebrew. It was originally written in the same kind of script that we think Hebrew as being written in. But Syriac is a particular dialect of Aramaic that had its home in the northern part of Syria, southern part of what's now Turkey, and it eventually took on the style, the alphabet, the font, I guess we would say today, the style of writing or the script that we think of as being associated with Arabic today. It's not exactly the same as the modern Arabic script, but it looks to the uninitiated like Arabic. And so it's basically Aramaic written in an Arabic-looking kind of script. It's used throughout its history, used largely in the church and for church purposes. And it's very important, particularly for those who study the early church, because many of the fathers, early church fathers, their writings only survive in Syriac. Syriac was immensely influential in the eastern half of Christianity, and throughout, as I said, the Middle East, Syria, Turkey, Palestine, and so forth, it became really a very influential language for use in the church, and it still survives today, of course, in a few isolated communities. But it was very influential, and up until the invasion of Arabic with the Muslim invasions in the in the 7th century, Syriac pretty much started to die out. It survives, as I said, in just a few isolated communities, and of course, it's the liturgical language of the Syriac Orthodox Church around the world.
Let's talk a bit about the difficulty that is presented when something like this is either found or, in this case, discovered. There seems to be a problem with the black market. There seems to be a problem with tracing the lineage of these kinds of discoveries. How difficult is that, Dr. Adams?
Well, it can be almost impossible to establish the authenticity of something like this requires a combination of skills. Today, we tend to think of it primarily in terms of scientific things like dating the paper, analyzing the ink, and so forth. But also, one looks at the language and the writing style. The style of handwriting itself can tell us something about the age. I mentioned before the binding, since it's in book form. That, too, can tell us something about the age. But many of these things, of course, are easily faked. And among experts, even paper and ink can be faked to the point where they can fool some people. And I'm no expert in this area, but a determined and well-qualified forger can produce something that could fool most experts. And, of course, if one went to that much trouble to produce something, it would be an immense effort and would be valuable in its own right, but it wouldn't be authentic. So there are tremendous challenges, largely because we can't demonstrate the provenance or the history of ownership and control of a document like this. And without knowing, having some good idea of the provenance of it, or who owned it, how was it passed down, and so forth, it's bound to be controversial, as various scientists and analysts look at it and make assessments of its age.
Someone might be concerned. They'd think, well, if there are fakes like this floating around, if this is indeed a fake, can we then trust the manuscripts upon which the modern editions of both the Old and the New Testaments have been assembled? What are your thoughts there with about a minute before we conclude our conversation?
Well, I think that's not an issue that should trouble people. The manuscripts on which our modern editions of the Bible are based come from a well-known provenance. That is to say that we know where they've been for 1,000 years. So we know where Codex Sinaiticus has been, since the 4th century. It's actually in 5 different places now, of course, because it got split up, but that's a different story. We know where Codex Vaticanus is, or has been, for most of its history. So the provenance of these texts are well established. And also, there's quite a science of textual analysis that would let us compare readings. So if we have massive numbers of manuscripts, especially for the New Testament, and there's a tremendously detailed science. So if a new manuscript came along with a different reading, it would take a lot of work before scholars would be convinced that that new variant should represents the authentic biblical reading. So I don't think there's any question that that modern biblical translations are founded on very reliable texts, even though there are always a few minor variations to be talked about, and those are important issues. But generally speaking, the text of the Bible as we have it is highly reliable.
Dr. David Adams is Associate Professor of Old Testament at Concordia Seminary in St. Louis, author of the forthcoming Concordia Commentary on Genesis. Dr. Adams, thanks for being our guest.
Great to be with you, as always, Todd.
Well, when we come back, rounding off this first hour of Issues, Etc., we'll talk about the legal challenge to the wording of an embryonic stem cell research ballot initiative in Missouri. Stephen Clark of Missouri Roundtable for Life will be our guest. I'm Todd Wilkin. Stay tuned.
On behalf of the staff of Issues Etc., thanks to each and every one of the more than 7,600 who signed the online petition to bring back Issues Etc. Rachel Locke, Patty Brady, Thomas Wayman, Casey Nizansky, Charles Martin, Maria Buelthius, Phyllis Martin, Pastor Kenneth Vigi, Bobette Smith, and Debbie Moratsky. Thanks for your support.
Have you heard of the CLCC? In Hosea 4, we see, "My people are destroyed by lack of knowledge." The Confessional Lutherans for Christ's Commission can help educate Lutherans on being Lutheran. We treasure our Lutheran beliefs and think that all Lutherans would if they learn what we believe, teach, and confess. Visit our website, www.theclcc.org. Check out what we have to offer. Get on our mailing list, or better yet, join us. And maybe encourage your pastors or lay leaders to hold a seminar in your area. Go to theclcc.org.
True Lutheran for a Lutheran radio station. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Here's a new way to support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. You can now donate stocks, bonds, and mutual funds to Lutheran Public Radio. For more information, contact Craig at 618-223-8382, 618-223-8382. Please consider donating stocks, bonds, or mutual funds to Issues Etc. in 2009. Call Craig today, 618-223-8382. Thanks for your support.
Good Shepherd Lutheran Church in Collinsville, Illinois is happy to support the Christ-centered, cross-focused ministry of Issues Etc. Join us for worship, Bible classes, youth ministry, and other opportunities to grow in Christ. We have a Christian day school for children in preschool to 8th grade. We are located at 1300 Beltline Road. Call us at 618-344-3151 or visit www.goodshepherdcollinsville.org.